Darren Frost, a white man in his 30s with short dark hair, opens up a laptop and takes a sip of water. He then recites his poem Uncomfortable Hero, while an overhead view of the Thames plays.
When filled with terror, your knees go weak, you can hardly speak.
London Bridge, November 2019.
Reports are coming into us of an incident at London Bridge. Our correspondent...
You can probably hear those gunshots behind me. I don't know if you can hear them. There have been several now on London Bridge.
The mind starts reeling. Choice? What choice? You try or people die.
The attacker shot dead on London Bridge yesterday was a convicted terrorist. He's been named as 28-year-old Usman Khan from Staffordshire.
Usman Khan was invited to the Learning Together event at Fishmongers Hall near London Bridge.
Stop. This is real.
Jack Merritt and Saskia Jones were two young people trying to make a positive difference in the unglamorous sector of offender rehabilitation. But their lives were cut tragically short by one of those they were trying to help.
Blades, 8 inches, not one, but two. Both hands, duct taped.
How did a man first convicted in 2012 and under active investigation manage to commit murder at an education conference at Fishmongers Hall?
Two blades, one bomb.
Terror attack in London. We're learning more about the heroes who used makeshift weapons to take down the knife wielding.
On London Bridge Theatre for the world to see, we took him down, the police await. Unlikely heroes, immigrants and prisoners offering their lives.
Members of the public, including other convicted offenders at the event, grabbed whatever they could to keep Khan at bay.
One of the people that tackled that man was a convicted murderer.
And you could see that synchronicity when we chased him down to London Bridge. The three of us coming together was probably the perfect combination.
Four lives willing sacrifice. We stood, we fought, we bled, and we drove him out.
He's got a bomb.
Panic, fear, three guns, two knives, one bomb, one trigger, no hope.
London Bridge, facing terror. A bald white man wearing a dark polo shirt sits down for an interview.
You best take off the shirt.
The narwhal tusk, it is magical. From the moment my hand touched that first narwhal tusk, no one but Khan was harmed.
At the time of the event, Darren Frost had been a communications manager for the Ministry of Justice for 12 years.
It's not even cushioned.
John Crilly takes a seat.
It was just instinct, I guess. It was instinct on the bridge. Literally just found all there was a fire extinguisher. Which I picked up thinking I'd just throw this at him. One minute we was heroes, the next minute we were absolutely in his scum. It don't fit their narrative, does it? Heroes also being convicted murderers.
John Crilly had served 13 years in prison for his role in a murder. He was released a year before the incident.
If you do get fit, just saying, we'll just...
Yeah, we can edit it out so I can pretend that I'm really fit and healthy. Usman met me at my peak.
Wow.
But after that, of course, the impact of London Bridge, everything was going on, sort of knocked me out of my gym routine, which I've been in for 14 and a half years. So it's almost like it's physically changed me as well.
That's really interesting.
Or maybe I'd know nothing else to prove. You know, I proved it. That was it. I'd done me a bit, yeah. Nothing else to prove.
At the time of the event, Steve Gallant was 14 and a half years into a life sentence for murder. He was granted a special day release to attend the event with a prison officer.
It was a very sunny day. The sky was very clear. But he was learning to give his 5-year anniversary, so he'd been running for 5 years by that time. And I'd been invited to attend the event at Fishmongers Hall on London Bridge.
So Learning Together was a prisoner education programme.
It was set up by two Cambridge University academics. Students from Cambridge University
would go into the different prisons and work alongside us, serving prisoners.
They're very well-spoken people. When I first met them, I did think to myself, God, I dare open my mouth because I might think I'm daft, but I quickly learned that they weren't that sort of people. They was very engaging, very kind, very understanding, and just really there to try and help people.
Learning Together commissioned a videographer to document the event. The following footage was filmed 2 hours before the attack.
So for me, I'd not left the prison at the time, I'd not been out at all. That would be my first out of prison, 14 and a half years. So for me, the out was not only a big achievement, it was quite exciting.
A little bit like this.
Fishmonger's Hall was absolutely stunning. I was so in awe of the architecture and the internal glamour of the place.
No beige here.
I was working for the Ministry of Justice, and I was very much a supporter of projects or programs that gave people in prison a chance, and I saw this as one of the best examples. Students and prisoners all just being students together. I thought it was an incredible initiative.
I suppose the morning started, as it does for any time I give a large presentation. I try to wake up quite early and, you know, get my nerves in check. So I got there obscenely early. At the entry table, Jack, with his very vivacious personality, was immediately out of his chair and, you know, bantering with me.
A photo of Jack Merritt smiling.
I have a very strong memory of talking over the breakfast with two men, really articulate and really excited about the day. And I remember thinking, maybe they're administrators or maybe they're press. And then I met with one of the organizers and they were like, oh, you know, those were our students a couple years ago. And it was this really incredible moment of seeing so many of our missions put in action. Like, we have been yelling from the rooftop that the key to reentry is for people to just be people, for you to walk in and not have the scarlet letter of ex-con.
So yeah, it was just a celebration of learning together, and I was invited to like discuss what I'd got from it and ways of going forward, basically. Learning Together, come to Grendon Prison, where I was serving time for murder. I'd already started my law degree, and so I was in the academic frame of mind.
How do you read that?
I have to have my glasses on. Scope of the common duty of care. It's the best thing I've ever seen in prison. You've got to sit with Cambridge students who you've obviously got preconceptions about. Find out that things aren't that different. They go through tragedies just like we do. That they're more equipped or a better position to get through sometimes. So yeah, I wanted to give my little piece. Learning Together, I felt I owed them. Me and Simon, which was another facilitator of Learning Together, I'd been told he had to meet someone and take him to the event. Another student who didn't know his way there, which was Osman Khan. Simon just introduces us, and he just literally looks through me, so... Yeah, I just follow Simon and him through the tube stations to the event. Remember getting up to the door, yeah. But the door was locked, we had to get buzzed in.
Hi, my name's Osman, and basically, I'm gonna explain to you how I got introduced to Learning Together. So a bit about myself, I was in prison and I did 8 years. That's 8 years in prison.
Usman Khan enrolled in Learning Together's creative writing course while serving time in prison for terrorism offences.
What was different about Learning Together? The main thing what was different was breaking them barriers. You know, accepting people for who they are. You know, accepting what background they come from. That didn't matter. It didn't matter what your previous, what your conviction, what you believed. It was about that moment.
He was released 11 months before the Fishmongers Hall event.
And that is why I think learning together matters, and it should matter. And basically what they are doing, it is making a difference.
Footage of Usman looking around the packed crowd, filling the main hall at the event.
There were 100-odd delegates, and there were speeches, and there was a group session, and it was actually just a lovely environment. There were a few things happening at the time through the Ministry of Justice. That's when I really got to do the stuff that I loved, which was meeting people in prison, hearing what motivates their behaviours. This was the rehabilitative culture. The idea here is if you treat people humanely, they start to react and respond better, and the evidence shows it. The Netherlands decided to start following that model, and they're shutting prisons 10 years later. We've decided to go the opposite route and keep banging the punishment drum. And for anyone who says that punishment works, I would say 80% of all convictions every year are reconvictions. So it doesn't work. And we're calling this justice. I'm sorry, it's injustice. There's good and bad in every single person. Things just aren't black and white, and we've got to just be a bit more realistic and understand that we're all human, even Usman Khan. There's a story, there's a pattern, there's a journey, and you know what? We are not blameless.
London Bridge, facing terror.
And it was a memorable day for all the wrong reasons, so I can remember pretty much everything. Just a normal day, really. It was a Friday. I was going off to work, as usual. Jack was going off to work. I'm notorious at home for asking questions and then not listening to the answers. So he probably did mention at some point that he was going to London, but it kind of passed me by. Jack finished his master's degree and moved back home.
For those that don't know me, my name's Jack. I work on the Learn Together team.
He was very positive about it. It was his first proper job since leaving university, and it was interesting work. It was a really nice period. We were getting on really well. We were doing stuff together occasionally. So good times, and when he left for work, I just kissed him on the cheek. That was it. Just a normal day.
A photo of Jack smiling with his mum and dad at his graduation.
You know, had a keen sense of justice and injustice. I think that's what kind of motivated him at work. You know, what can I do in my career to try and help to make the system fairer?
As soon as Jack walked through the door, he stuck out. This was like monochrome look, and his Doc Martens, his slick haircut, and his just big mad smile he had. And he was just dead nice, dead welcoming, dead friendly. Made me feel at ease. He believed in you, really, I guess.
Now CCTV footage of Jack walking into Fishmongers Hall.
It's hard to picture yourself belonging in that kind of circles. Socialising with them, with professors and fellows and stuff. Yes, and I think we got to dinner time and he was doing some buffet upstairs.
Do you mind me asking how old you are?
Me now? 51. Going on 88. 51 today. I haven't been back to prison. Offending's not going to be an option. There's obviously too much to lose, so if I do a crime, I'll do my time for it. But 20 years for something that I didn't do, just beyond me. Big, massive injustice. In 2005, I was selling drugs at the time in Manchester. And then one day, the dealer brought a lad to me and asked me to let him drive. A few weeks down the line, Flynn, my new driver, asked me to go on about this burglary. He knew where there's definitely money in.
I knocked on the door, even shouted in the letterbox, but got no answer. So we assumed there was no one in. It was only when we went in, we come across the occupier sat in the couch in the corner. He had tinnitus, so he couldn't hear the door.
Flynn's not for moving, he's screaming, there's money in here, I'm going nowhere, there's definitely money in here. And just said, come on, look, we need to leave, there's an out here. The only reason I'm staying at is to try and get Flynn out.
To try and stop any violence happening, to say, I'm going, this is stupid. And it was just then that he punched him, one punch. It was over before I could stop it.
I was found guilty because under joint enterprise for the secondary party, as in I.e. the person who stood there who doesn't throw the fatal blow. Instead of using evidence, the jury found I could possibly foresee that event, then I'm equally as guilty and they have to find me guilty of murder. So yeah, they give me 18 years for one punch, which he accepts I did not throw. So ask yourself, that's a massive injustice.
An overhead view of London Bridge, then a clock inside Fishmongers Hall, and workshop leader Danny Headland standing in front of a podium as guests take their seats.
I was honestly pretty nervous about this talk because of how diverse the actual audience would be. The idea that my classroom would be full of not only formerly incarcerated people, currently incarcerated people, but students, politicians. Like, I remember stepping up onto the stage and being like, what if this is just crickets? What if I just stand up here for an hour and no one connects? And that is absolutely not what happened. It was amazing. It was an amazing amount of participation from the group and this feeling that we were all together. And it brought me so much joy.
Frame-by-frame footage of Usman, a Muslim man with close-cropped black hair and a thick beard, sitting at a table in the hall.
Khan spoke. He talked about how he had been involved in gang life and how through being incarcerated and through a variety of people that had come out to help him, that he was able to see that he was in a really big negative cycle and he was only thinking about the sort of narratives that other people were telling him. And he talked about how he felt like that had changed now, like that he had been telling himself a new story. He said it very convincingly.
I think for me, I just got the impression that he'd perhaps changed in life, and whatever he was thinking previously was probably antisocial, and it had changed, and that now he was thinking more pro-socially. And yeah, I had a positive view of what he'd said, and I could relate to it.
Do you believe in redemption?
And the idea that people can change? Yeah, I mean, it's the crux of my story. And that's why I've never allowed that initial crime that I committed to define me. And that doesn't mean to say that I'm not taking responsibility for it. That's a different thing altogether. But not allowing it to define me as a person was really important in my journey through the prison system. I think what you do is you recognise that you've done something wrong. And you can then set about changing your life. So start to educate myself, change the sort of people I'm hanging around with, and obviously stay away from violence. I didn't sort of light a candle and get down on my knees, and I just made a decision that I would not use violence to resolve my issues. For me, you know, I'd experienced the losses, and the losses were too much, and I thought, I can't go through this again. And if I'm going to get out in one piece and get out as quick as possible,
then these are the commitments I need to make and stick to. So that's what I did.
Footage from the event shows Steve Gallant chatting with another attendee. Later footage shows Usman sitting at a table. He's not interacting with anyone. Instead, he's checking the time on his watch. The footage freezes on the image of Usman, looking at his watch.
Then it was break time. One of the Lens Together team came up to me and asked me if I would go for a photograph with Jack. I said, yeah, no problem. I got the nod off my escort, so yeah, you're okay. Just to capture that moment, I guess. First day out of prison.
At this moment, Usman Khan heads to the toilet to ready himself for the attack.
Whenever there's a break, I normally wait to go at the end, towards the end of the break, to go to the loo.
The word gentleman is stenciled on a wooden bathroom door.
I remember hearing someone in the cubicles at the gents, and there was a bit of a scuffling sound, and I just thought, oh, they're having a difficult time in there, or they're changing or something. But that was all that I thought, and I washed my hands and left.
Someone had noticed that Usman was missing. And Jack was one of the type of guys who would go around and collect stragglers anywhere. So off he goes to go and find Usman, makes his way downstairs to the toilets.
And that's where Jack, that's where he was attacked.
From an aerial view of London Bridge to footage from inside the Learning Together event at Fishmongers Hall, Steve is talking to another attendee sitting at his table.
So it wasn't long before it was time to go back in for the next part of the session.
We're actually with my mentor, Judge John Samuels, and we'd literally gone out onto a landing. And then we just started speaking for about a minute, 2 minutes, when we started hearing screaming.
Somebody laughed nervously. I think some people thought it might have been kids messing about or something.
Then we heard some more noises.
And we just started looking at each other, like, what's going on? And it just started getting proper loud, like, more.
It clearly wasn't somebody messing around. The escort was with me, Adam. He looked at me and said, look, stay there. And he went to go and investigate.
I remember going downstairs, double-sided staircase, big posh staircase. I can see a young girl lying at the bottom of the steps. I was suddenly just seeing Khan. I started screaming, just shouting at him, like, what are you fucking doing? What's going on, sort of? And then obviously he's swinging for me now. So I'm just jumping back, basically trying to stay out of his way, looking for something to like defend myself with.
Then the screams continued, and kept going. And so I just thought, fuck it, I'll go and investigate. So I jumped up.
I remember this quite vividly because I stood up at the exact same time as Steve Gallant stood up, and we both ran across the hall.
He had a belt on, I didn't know if he was going to blow a belt, I didn't know what he was going to do. You could already see it, but he like just lifted his shirt up a bit more to like highlight it. But yeah, he just said, I'm just waiting for the police and I'm going to blow it. I told him to blow it then. Yeah, just said, fucking blow it then.
At the top of the stairs, I turned and I instinctively was going to look for something to defend myself. I passed this dimly lit little corridor, and at the end were these two nearly 2 meter long narwhal tusks. I had never seen a narwhal tusk in my life, but from the moment I touched it, it was like a real intimate thing to me. You can feel how it is twisted, almost like plaited hair. I could tell instinctively that its power was at the tip and that it needed to be used as a spear. And from that very first moment, it was just like I was one with it. There was definitely something magical about that.
As I walked down a bit further, I saw somebody stood in the foyer with two big knives in his hands. I think about 8-inch knives. And it had, you know, the strap to his hand with tape.
As I arrived, there was a young lady laying on the floor. And it was a really strange scene because the light was so bright from the street, it was shining in through the window, coming down like this stream of light and surrounding her. And it was shining off her hair, but also off the floor. I could see the bits of dust floating in the air. Everything kind of slowed down. And he turned to me and he said, "I'm not here for you. I'm here for the police." He was quite childlike in his pleading there for us to stop attacking him almost. Now, Steve stood right next to me in the doorway, but is totally unarmed.
Suddenly, I turned to my side and there was someone stood next to me with a narwhal tusk, holding it out towards me.
There was that moment where Steve and I just looked at each other in the eyes. We never even spoke or anything. And I just offered up the tusk and he just looked at me and he went down for it. And there was kind of this shared experience. I was representing the Ministry of Justice. He was a life sentence prisoner. But at that time, we both had the same common goal. And that passing of the tusk was like passing of trust.
He knows now I'm coming towards him, swinging his knives. And I managed to stab him with it, but he's bounced off a little bit. Didn't have much effect. So they whack him again with a narwhal tusk, but it snaps over him.
Literally just found a fire extinguisher. I think I just spray him with it. It was obvious he didn't like it. It was blinding him. And that's when he went for the door.
As I'm walking out of that building, it's probably the first time in all those years as well, is that I'm completely free. There's no escort with me. So I'm now independent, I'm on my own. And it's the first time I've engaged in violence in 14 and a half years. So I had all these profound things going on in my head. And then my mind goes blank.
That's when I come out the door and I run down the stairs with the second narwhal tusk. And then I had the interaction with Khan where I stabbed him. As I'd pulled out the narwhal tusk, he seemed to buckle over in that second. And that's when the fire extinguisher goes off, which perfectly, with the wind going across the bridge, disguises Steve as he gets just behind Khan.
It was only when I felt cold spray at my arm from the fire extinguisher that my memory picks up again. I can visualize my hands grabbing him. I have played rugby for years. I've done wrestling, bodily movement, leg movement, and balance all my life, really. I think my instinct drove me. Plus, my adrenaline was firing as well, so probably gave me the perfect combination to bring him down to the floor. A gap opened up, and I gave him a couple of uppercuts to take him down to the ground.
It was just an incredible moment where the three of us came together to apprehend him, and not one of us got hurt. I jump on his back and I grab both of his wrists.
He's on the floor now. I jumped on one hand and his dad got on the other hand. When I got the blade off him, I've instinctively turned it round and I started hitting Khan in the temple with it. But I remember dad, I'll never forget dad saying, "Don't hit him, don't hit him."
In that moment, I found myself being Khan's protector and trying to direct people away from taking out their anger by kicking them in the head, directing them to what I saw as the immediate threat, which was the knives.
I think in that situation, I said, "What the fuck are you on about me? You just tried to kill us." I was thinking it was nuts.
Film of a helicopter above the bridge, then a police car arriving on the scene.
The lead guy was coming to me. He was shouting the most aggressively. Then there was the guy who was directly in front of me, and he seemed to be second in command. And then there was a third guy who seemed to be less confident of what he was doing there, and he was just off to the right, and he kept moving like that a little bit, but he also seemed to be a bit further away. The guy over here never took his gun off of us, not for one second. The guy over here, he had his gun pointing to me whenever he moved away, but when he came closer, he would drop it to try and pull me. And like, the thing is, things happened really quickly, but for me, they're in huge amount of detail. And when the police arrived, I was trying to negotiate with them to get them to assist me. And from the moment we had him on the ground, face down, and I had both of his wrists outstretched above his head, he stopped being the attacker, and he then became a restrained, defenseless man.
Get back, fucking move, armed police. And so everyone started to peel away slowly, and I just let everyone peel off. And there's only me and Darren left at the end. But I realised, well, we're just in the way, you know, so best move. But so I grabbed all the Darren, tried to give him a pull, but he won't let him go.
Footage of Darren with Usman and officers pointing their guns.
I'm looking at him this close, and he just looks up at the police officer, and in a gentle voice, he says, "I've got a bomb."
What is going on?
He's got a bomb.
That's the moment I know that the situation is out of control. I still kept seeing him as a human being, as a man first. He was a man with knives. He was a man who had all hope removed from him. I could see that in his eyes. He had nothing left to live for.
An officer pulls at Darren, then he hurries off. Darren's covering his ears. Darren looks over his shoulder.
I just wanted him to shoot him.
A man has his arms around John.
I'd just seen you done to Saskia. I did want him dead, yeah?
John looks thoughtful. On the bridge, John's led away.
Many, many years ago, I was punished profoundly for that initial crime that I committed. I'd made a promise to myself that I wouldn't use violence again. And there I was using violence. This idea about violence is never straightforward. You know, the way people operate and think. In one context, you've got an act of violence which is completely unjustified. And in another context, you've got an act of violence, but it's completely justified. I think people understand that a degree of violence is necessary if it reduces the potential of more violence.
The film in slow motion of Steve and the others on the bridge, a little distance away from the officers and Usman. At a further distance, people are watching the police operation.
Going back into the hall, and you know, I could see that Adam, the escorting officer, was still with who I now know as Saskia Jones.
The carpeted stairs.
I remember Steve standing kind of in shock. And that's when we introduced each other. Steve said, "I'm Steve Gallant. I'm a serving prisoner, and it's my first day out of prison in 14 and a half years." And he's like, "I made a vow of nonviolence, and I've been violent today for the first time since my offense." And that really stuck with me.
after a while they shook their heads and so she obviously died on that spot.
Granite columns and the glazed door.
I remember stopping and saying to Steve, oh my God, I think they've stopped, I think they've lost her. And my world crumbled then. I remember the blue blanket that they put on top of her, and I was just feeling angry that it didn't feel like good enough quality. It was a weird thing that's gonna make me cry, sir. That she wasn't treated with enough dignity, but I understand now that that's just what they had.
Darren looks down. London Bridge, facing terror. The sun's rising, casting Tower Bridge in silhouette. Meanwhile, people are walking over London Bridge.
Good afternoon. One of the victims of yesterday's terror attack has been named as Jack Merritt, a Cambridge graduate who was helping coordinate a conference on
confirm our breaking news this afternoon in that the second victim of the London Bridge terror attack has been named as 23-year-old Saskia Jones. There's the first image of her. She was from Stratford-upon-Avon in Warwick.
Like Jack Merritt, Saskia Jones was trying to play her part in improving people's lives.
She was fearless. She was a warrior. She was going to change the world. Maybe she will.
They were committed to improving the lives of others. The tragedy is Saskia and Jack had theirs taken by Usman Khan's act of terror.
Everything just kind of dissolved at that point. You know, we just...
Dave Merritt, Jack Merritt's father.
It's really hard to receive that sort of news. You know, it's just impossible news. You know in that instant that everything has changed.
Good evening. Two people have died in what the Metropolitan Police are describing as a terrorist incident on London Bridge. The attacker was later...
Anne and I slept in Jack's bed. Because we wanted to feel close to him. And it just seemed like the right thing to do.
A police officer standing in the road leading to the bridge and parked red double-deckers.
Today and this morning, there is, of course, just one main story after the attack on London.
You know, I kind of woke up and starting to realise that the story's out there. Obviously, it's a big media story.
Just over 2 weeks to go until the general election, and we are joined now.
The circumstances surrounding Khan's release are now in the spotlight, and this will be a key election issue here with police and...
Already people are starting to just use it to kind of pursue their agendas about prisons and prisoners and criminal justice system.
The office has issued a scathing criticism of the criminal justice system, saying that it's playing Russian roulette with the public by allowing convicted criminals to be...
And as I'm reading it, I'm just starting to get angry. People were using what happened to push their agendas.
The Prime Minister walking the same streets that 24 hours earlier were filled with fear.
We want to toughen up sentences for serious and violent offences, and this system simply isn't working. It does not make sense for us as a society, putting terrorists of serious, violent offences out on early release.
What Boris Johnson was proposing was the opposite of what Jack believed. And so I suppose it gave me courage in a way to just jump in and say, no, stop, you know, I'm not having this. This is not what Jack would have wanted, and it's not what we want, so just stop it.
Dave tweeted, Jack would not wish his death to be used as the pretext for more draconian sentences or for detaining people.
And I just said, you know, rest in peace, Jack. You're a beautiful soul. He was always on the side of the underdog.
a black and white image of Jack looking happy. A barge churning up the water on the Thames as it nears Tower Bridge.
I didn't know what happened to Jack until I was back in the open prison the next day. That's when I found out Jack had been killed alongside Saskia. I was shattered. I didn't realise, I didn't know at the time, but
I was probably suffering from some form of trauma.
Just spending time alone in my room, listening to music.
A group of pedestrians.
It does seem extremely cruel that it was Jack and Saskia, two people who were heavily engaged and committed to helping other people. No one more than husband himself, and yet became victims of that. Just a massive loss in so many ways.
Darren's extending a ladder before bringing a box down from his attic.
Do you mind me asking, like, how long has it been since you opened this box?
I haven't opened this box. It's kind of been a storage place because I wasn't in a place to be able to deal with any of the emotions that this stuff causes.
He lifts a newspaper out.
What date is this? November 30th. So this would have been the day after. And no one knew who anyone was. It was really interesting because even you could see the dilemma for the media. The reporting on the people who were serving sentences or had served sentences. One hero was a jailed murderer on day of release.
I think it was difficult for once people find out that some of the people who had saved lives were themselves convicted of very serious offences like murder. And that's just because people can't grasp the idea that some people can change. But I think some of that thinking does come from media and politicians and how they stigmatise and talk about criminals.
Were people quick to put labels on you? It's the wrong thing to do. People think people like me choose to become criminals. Like, I wanted to be a drug addict. I used to walk down the street with my mum and dad, happy as Larry. I didn't know, like, 5 years later, my mum would be killed. And I'd be just lost to the world. I won't shy away from it. I was a little mummy's boy, spoiled little brat. Yeah, it was just a massive big hole in it. I think I just fell in. Uh-huh. I just ended up going to the nearest drug addict because I just think I wanted to kill myself. But it turned out he was only taking amphetamine, so I just went off. Whizzing about like a mad lunatic. It could happen to any family. That's what people need to be aware of and more mindful of. That people don't just pick to be in these situations. Just have a bit of compassion and understanding for other people.
Reverend Paul Tyler, former prison chaplain.
If you call somebody a terrorist, it's a pejorative word, isn't it? As soon as you use one word, you skew everything, you know. So you no longer see Usman Khan, you see the terrorist.
Paul's shaven-headed, white, and wears a dog collar, riding his motorbike.
The good versus evil, us versus them, the othering of people, is right at the heart of the way we are today. And I think prisons are a very, very clear example of that. First time I encountered Usman, I was in a cell visiting another prisoner. And suddenly there was a shout, the door burst open, Usman ran in to attack this prisoner. But I was sitting right behind the door. So it smacked into me. I got hit in the head and knocked down onto the floor, and he went over the top of me. Probably about a second later, but it seemed like hours, the cell filled up with officers. restrained us and took him off to the segregation units. The next day I went to visit the segregation unit, as I was my job, and there was Usman. And it was strange because the moment he spoke, I said, oh, you're from Stoke, because the Stoke accent is a one-off. It's just wonderful and different. And we had this quite surreal conversation because I had been, as a young Pentecostal Christian, on the streets giving out Christian tracts to people so they would become Christians. And 30 years later, he'd been on exactly the same street corners giving out Muslim tracts. And we just saw the funny side of it and just roared with laughter. But then after talking about that for quite a bit, you know, he sort of became a bit more formal and said that he wanted to make an official apology, that he'd brought shame on Islam by attacking me.
And so what were your first impressions of him?
A young lad from Stoke who looked... I would say looked a bit lost. And that's a gut feeling.
Mahmoud Mizar is a retired youth inclusion officer who worked with teenage Usman Khan. Wearing a traditional Muslim headdress, Mahmoud gets into the car's passenger seat.
If you want to, we can drive down there.
No.
And I'll show you where the boys actually were preaching. See here, where it says Army Reserve Centre. That is where Usman Khan was leafleting. But it wasn't leafleting hatred, it was just leafleting about his religion. People felt intimidated and started saying his hate preaching.
13-year-old Usman Khan was expelled from school after a fight with another pupil who had racist tendencies. Usman never received another day of formal education in his life.
Whilst Usman was on the streets, he was fine, he was a lovely lad. Honest to God, 100% respect to me, my family. Then
things really changed.
This year, the BNP has capitalized on the race riots and the events of September the 11th and polled some of its best ever elections.
A white man hurls racist anti-Muslim insults at riot police.
It was dark times for Muslim people. I'm not blaming the government, I'm not blaming the media, but what I'm saying is the words that they use, they have a massive effect on people's lives, and they do.
These two men both had their homes raided by Staffordshire Police. Neither has been arrested. They claim to have been treated unfairly.
Now I know I can never ever trust them. They've showed the hatred, they've showed how much they can hate you. They could be a Muslim.
There were some young people who were isolated. They didn't like what was going on. So they started to look at other avenues. When something is, the news is reported on television, the first thing that goes through my mind, oh my Lord, I hope a Muslim hasn't done this. Don't mention a Muslim name. Because we're just about going through the tunnel and we can see the light. And then when something like that happens, the light is snatched away.
Tonight, sentenced after a terrorist bombing plot, four men from Stoke-on-Trent are given lengthy jail terms.
Well, they were part of a group of Islamist radicals from London, Cardiff and...
So this idea that these are vulnerable people who've been radicalised, you know, there may be some grains of truth in that, you know, but there's an awful lot of other stuff going on as well. And all it does is allow us not to look at ourselves. Have these people got a grain of truth in their critique of the West? You know, which is not excusing what they may have done. But unless that other stuff is faced, we're going nowhere.
London Bridge, facing terror. The Road to London Bridge, Steve Gallant.
Has it helped writing the book? Like, has that process offered some sort of catharsis?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going into a lot of important moments in my life, which had a profound effect on me and other people. So some of it's been quite emotional.
My stepdaddy
He had a side to him which was not very, it wasn't the best. You know, I get myself in a little bit of bother. And his way of dealing with that was to use violence. Each slap, each punch was doing nothing more than writing the code to how I would respond to certain situations later on in life. I was 28 years old. I was out drinking with my friends one night, and I received a phone call saying that my partner had been attacked. It was quite a vicious attack. So 9 days later, a friend invited me to go to one of the local pubs, another pub for last orders. Once I got to that pub, I was told that the person who had allegedly attacked my partner was inside the pub. So at this point, I'm now drunk. I'm angry. He's a violent man. You're a violent guy. You know, this is not going to go down very well. The intention was to give him a good hiding, to get revenge for what I alleged he'd done to my partner. And indeed, when he came out of the pub, that's what happened. And he ended up dying as a result of that.
Steve looks thoughtful. Footage from London Bridge.
If you look at what Usman did and look at what I did, ultimately both ways of living resulted in somebody losing a life. There's definitely some similarities there in terms of I was living my life in a certain way and I was influenced by certain behaviours which blinded me to my own behaviour. Thought it was all normal. Thought I was on the right path. And no doubt Usman Khan was completely, utterly convinced that he was on the right path and showed no hesitation whatsoever.
John with the fire extinguisher.
It was just instinct, I guess. It was like it was instinct on the bridge. But I hate violence. My stomach just turns. I just hate violence.
But yeah, I think it's a necessary evil sometimes, isn't it?
Obviously, situations where you've got to defend yourself or defend people you're with.
Carrying flowers, John is walking through a cemetery.
Yeah, I know I was brought up well. My mum had morals. Instill some in me as well.
At her grave.
It's mad, you know, because I stayed on that burglary to try and stop any violence happening. I got a life sentence for it. And then I stayed on the bridge to try and stop some violence happening. I got totally treated differently. But in principle, it's the same sort of decision-making. If I just get off and save myself, or do I try and save other people? Yeah, both instances is detriment to myself. But in one, I'm considered a hero. And in another, I'm considered a murderer. Two very different sides of the coin.
Gliding over the Thames to London Bridge. People are crossing the bridge while cars are passing by. Darren's in his garden.
After the things that happened on Fishmonger's Hall, I really was in a bad place, and my brain would only ever go back to the thoughts of what happened on the bridge. The only thing that seemed to distract my brain was pottering about with plants. You have to be present in the moment and concentrating on what you're doing, and it was the only thing that managed to stop those impeding thoughts.
One of my earliest memories, I was around five, I witnessed some harrowing sexual abuse of another child, and I reported it. I wasn't really fully aware of what I'd witnessed, but I've seen the cause and hurt that violence and sexual violence towards another person can cause for the rest of their life. And I kind of assumed the position of their protector because at the time of the attack, there weren't any grown-ups to protect them. I think that kind of set me up for my life of how I saw the world and even on London Bridge. When I found myself being Khan's protector, It was a reaction in the moment. I don't know if I was contemplating it fully, but I was also trying to save Khan's life. I still kept seeing him as a human being, as a man first.
London Bridge, facing terror.
Clearly significant criticism in the verdicts that have been delivered in the inquest into the deaths of Saskia Jones and Jack Merritt.
A very emotional statement has just come through, in fact, from collectively put together by the jurors in this case, in fact. The jury would like to send their heartfelt condolences to the families of Saskia and Jack and all who love and miss these two wonderful people. They touch the lives of so many, and we want to convey to the families how seriously we've taken our responsibility. I'm so sorry, it is a very, very emotional statement. Well, let's just hear a little.
Dave Merritt.
It's clear to us that the arrangements put in place for managing Usman Khan after his release from prison in 2019 were not fit for purpose.
It was a litany of missed opportunities, really. There were red flags all over it.
Roles and responsibilities were unclear, communication between the agencies was inadequate, and leadership and coordination were weak.
Absolutely disgraceful. It was the prison system's job, probation's job, police's job to keep an eye on him. They all killed them kids.
An aerial view of the bridge. Darren's at home.
I did have survivor's guilt for quite a long time. So I made a personal vow that I wanted to use those events to bring about positive change.
For me personally, all I'm trying to do is, in Jack's and Saskia's honour, is extract something from that which could be then turned into something useful for society. That's why Darren and I, we've both committed to creating our own merit, an organisation which helps prison leavers find accommodation and employment.
Own Merit. It's a little nod to Jack and Saskia.
Hello, hello.
You good?
How are you doing, man?
Really welcome. Good.
How was the process of getting out of the prison?
It was really
all
easy.
Yeah?
I think I was the only one being released.
Oh, today?
Yeah.
Own Merit's first prison leaver.
It was your birthday yesterday, so I thought I'd get you a cake anyway. Did they get you?
We give prison leavers the basic support, a little bit of opportunity, and then hopefully by their own merit, they will succeed.
John Quilley now works as an ambassador for Jengba, a campaign group fighting against the use of joint enterprise.
The Supreme Court in 2016, he said, yes, you're right, we have been interpreting the law wrong. In effect, locking people up with no evidence. But still, to date, I'm the only person to win the appeal.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. It's bittersweet, my little one-off victory. And I know there's hundreds still suffering.
When John's conviction was overturned, it was huge, particularly the people who were still in prison. You know, this new, fresh hope that you can get your conviction quashed. They just want the freedom and the liberty back. They just want the respect back. Because when you convict someone of murder, nobody respects you anymore. The fact that John got out of prison and then what happened to him on London Bridge, that again tells you that if you've got a past and a criminal record, you can only be a hero for a day.
Do you
want to
say hello to John? John Crilly, he's just come in our office today. The famous John Crilly.
Oh, don't start all that. Oh. A good feeling knowing I could talk to mums or families and put them at rest of it. Obviously, I can't get the kids out, but I guess just talking to someone who's been through it all, it's priceless to him, I guess.
A barge and a tourist boat on the river.
I mean, yeah, London Bridge did two things. It showed how dangerous some people are. But London Bridge also showed the other end of the spectrum, that actually people can change. Because in my case, that balance between managing the risk and giving me an opportunity was right. They got it exactly right with Usman Khan. They got it profoundly wrong.
I can't pretend to understand Khan's mentality or his motivation. You know, it would be easy for me to say, yeah, lock them all up and throw away the key. It doesn't matter if it prevents someone like Jack or Saskia from being murdered in future. It's a price worth paying, but it's really not. It's really not. You can't just take that kind of blanket approach and say that anybody, you know, who has had any kind of involvement or interest in radical ideas is therefore a nailed-on future terrorist. You know, it's not good enough.
Inside the hall.
For me, Fishmongers Hall should have been the watershed moment where society took that opportunity to take a different path around the narrative of rehabilitation. If we could just get people to empathize a little bit and put themselves in their shoes, that would be a win. What act does a man have to take to forgive his past? It's a really difficult thing. You look at Steve and John literally willing to lay down their lives to save others.
They take Usman down.
When do we forgive? When do we say it's okay?
Do you think there's hope for change?
Yeah, I do. Jack and Saskia represent hope for me. Hopefully get people to just open their mind and think a bit more like Jack and Saskia. If you really want to make effective change for your grandkids, stop going around with your eyes shut.
John, Steve and Darren are soon to receive the Queen's Gallantry Medal for their bravery on London Bridge. They acted with extreme courage alongside other attendees, passers-by and Fishmongers Hall employees, who also risked their lives that day.